Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar, and I'm here today with Mark Sheeran. We are two of the co-authors of the Freedom Model for Addictions and the Freedom Model for the Family. We offer two ways to work directly with Stephen, Slate, Mark, and myself, and that is in person at our private retreat or over Skype or Zoom or FaceTime. Our books are available at thefreedommodel.org or on Amazon or one of the other online retailers. And if you have questions and you want to reach us, you can call us at 888-424-2626. That's 888-424-2626. Or you can send us an email at info@thefreedommodel.org. You can also follow us on social media, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, we're going to talk about the fact that the Freedom Model is the official deprogramming guide from Alcoholics Anonymous and other 12-step programs. That's a bold statement, right? There's a lot of books out there and a lot of methods, and there's a lot of opinion, right?
Mm-hmm.
About how to move past all this addiction stuff. And the thing that makes the Freedom Model so different is we attack the idea throughout the book through science and through research. We attack the idea that you need recovery. And it's really interesting because we've covered different angles on this in different podcasts in the past, but this idea that people will agree that it's not a disease almost offhandedly, and then they'll think they need recovery, you know, when they stop or moderate, that there's some sort of other support system that's necessary, which sort of brings it full circle right back to meetings and the very thing that created the disease concept to begin with, which was Bill Wilson's fantasies. So the very first lines in the book, you know, we call recovery a trap. And this ruffles feathers. I mean, it's seen as radical by some people. Some people will say, yeah, and sort of blow it off and dismiss it as semantics. But it's really not semantics, because the Freedom Model is the only model I know of that is unequivocal. It doesn't shake on the premise that the human being, the individual, is the only thing that can stop or moderate their use, is the individual. It's not a matter of weakness. And recovery is based on the idea that there is a vessel filled or partially filled with willpower, and that it's a question of power and will. We see that all the time on the deprogramming sites, on social media. You know, you just have to be strong. You just have to, you know, do this or that. You just need some support, right? Recovery is based on support. This idea that you need support, you need a good support network to cope with life. So that brings the whole argument right back to that it's a matter of strength. Some sort of lack of strength is the problem. Which, isn't that what AA says? Lack of power, that was our dilemma, right?
Well, that's step one.
Yeah.
Admitted we are powerless. I want to just say something about the fact that even people that reject AA, when they seek help, they seek help with the premise that there's something wrong with them, which I get. I totally understand it. I mean, if it's a lot of people think, okay, a lot of people that listen to us, some of them that read our book, will go to the willpower thing. They'll go to people just have to learn how to say no. They just got to buck up. They got to just, and it's not either of those things. It's not that you're powerless, and it's not that you have a disease, and it's not that you lack willpower, and it's not that you're a bad person. It's not a moral issue. And everybody gets stuck thinking it has to be one of those things. Mm-hmm. When what it really is just a strong preference for drinking, a strong preference for a certain behavior that, by the way, is not a morally reprehensible behavior. It's It's not a bad behavior. It's not bad or good. It's just something that people choose to do that they like. They develop a habit around. And so when people decide AA is not for them and they want to leave, even people that don't have, that haven't been in AA for very long or that haven't been exposed to treatment still need a certain amount of deprogramming, because our culture is so fixated on the idea that people who have an addiction are sick or flawed in some way.
Yeah, you know, that exactly. We'll get somebody at our retreat where it's a really exciting time for me, because I get to work one-on-one with my guest, and they'll say, you know, pretty much right from the beginning, I know I don't have a disease. I know I don't have a disease.
Yeah.
And then they spend the next 3 weeks struggling to say, yeah, I liked getting high. And they feel filled with shame and they feel regretful. And I get all of that. And our culture teaches us, and treatment teaches us, and the 12 steps teach us to not or to sort of do a reverse analysis, to look at the consequences of use instead of looking at the fact that when we start to get high, we actually like it, which we covered in the last podcast. And so if you want to have progress start, and you want to get rid of this idea that you need support, you have to take ownership of why you actually like getting drunk and high. At some fundamental level, you do, or you wouldn't do it. Humans don't do things they don't want to do. And so a lot of the progress starts in the beginning with a guest or somebody that we're working with private instruction or whatever it might be, when they can finally say, yeah, I did choose it. I did like it. And then we get away from the idea of strength and power and willpower, and we get down to what the real cause of use is, which is that we prefer it. We prefer it for the benefits it provides. And no matter how meager they are, if the person's life has been reduced to just getting rid of withdrawal by sticking a needle in his arm or her arm, that can be the happiness that they're looking for, because it's better than withdrawal, right? So there's always a happiness motive, and then when they realize, and it's usually an epiphany in class where they finally can look me in the eye and say, yeah, you know what, I do get high for this reason, and this reason, and they're all positively based reasons.
Right.
And when they do that, then we can pit that against what are the benefits, and this is important, what are the benefits of not using or moderating. Now, why is all this important? You know, first of all, it's important to know that the authors, me, Michelle, and Steve, in my case, I went to over 3,000 AA meetings in my lifetime. So I was indoctrinated in AA from a young age. So this isn't me bashing on AA. It's simply stating the facts. And there's a way to not be in recovery. There's a way to be actually free. And that's by recognizing that you prefer to get high and that you can prefer abstinence or moderation more. When you factually and intuitively and know in your gut and your heart that doing less would make you happier than doing more, well, you'll do less.
Yep. That's how all people change, whether they go to treatment or don't go to treatment, whether they're in AA or not in AA. We've known a lot of people in AA who stayed sober for many, many years. But they did so the exact same way that we did, which is they came to the conclusion they could be happier not drinking than they could be drinking. They didn't need all the nonsense. I'm not trying to be nasty with that, but when it comes right down to it, we tested all of it. It's all gobbledygook. It doesn't mean anything.
Well, it's a huge distraction from the truth.
Yeah.
It's a huge distraction from looking at the benefits of use. This is why I started this podcast with talking about looking at the benefits of getting high and drunk, right? Why do we do that in class? Why is that one of the first things I ask a student is, what did you like about the experience of getting high and drunk? Because we got to get rid of all the shame and all the nonsense and all the distraction that distracts away from that. You know, one of the first things treatment does is the opposite. It says you shouldn't get high.
And it has you look at all the reasons why you shouldn't like it.
Right. When you do.
Right. And you're already very familiar with all of the consequences, all of the crap, the shit that it's doing in your life. You're already familiar with the shitstorm that's become your life. And so now you're supposed to look at that even more. Well, all that does for most people, all it would have done for me and did for me, was make getting high that much more attractive.
Yeah, it does. It builds an attractiveness because your mind figures out it and analyzes things by basis of comparison. So if your life has been reduced to really looking at addiction as your only option, and then somebody is pointing out how terrible your life is, and your only option that you know that gives you some happiness is getting high, well, my God, you just made getting high look very attractive. See, there's a lot of things in the freedom model that we address. People say, well, it can't just be as simple as making a choice, a determination based on I'd be happier if I moderated or I'd be happier if I abstained. And I can agree with that. It's not that simple, but only because for 100 years now, we've been going down a path culturally that has complicated the uncomplicated.
Yes.
So 100 years ago, if you were a drunkard in the street, and your wife said, I'm leaving you, or whatever, you're going to lose your job, and then you stopped drinking. I mean, or you went to jail, right?
Or you ended up homeless and drinking because that's what you wanted to do.
But the social norms were so strict and so clear and so black and white that most people didn't have the problems we have today.
Right.
So now we wallow in this gray, murky area that seems to have no real answer, called recovery.
Yep.
I'm a person in recovery. What the hell does that even mean?
Right.
There's no disease. There's no reason. You're not in recovery from anything because the thing that's driving your use is choice. There is no battle to be had. There are just choices to be made. That's one of the lines in the book. So here we have a book that takes, 450 odd pages to go through mythology and break apart all the mythology that's been created in Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's a deprogramming guide. Now, here's the irony. Alcoholics Anonymous is hardly even mentioned throughout the book because what we do is we go through the theories, the underpinnings of Alcoholics Anonymous. We go through each of its ideas that are now just literally taken for granted throughout our society, and we break them apart. So it's important that you don't think that I'm bashing AA or that I have some axe to grind. I don't even care. I don't care about AA. They're dust to me. That whole organization is nothing. It's the past. It means literally nothing to me. I spent a lot of years there. I've studied it inside and out to a level that is more than any other researcher I know in the world today. So I don't have to spend my time there. But the only reason now I'm even discussing it is because a lot of you listeners are still in it. And a lot of you don't even know that you're completely duped into believing things that are totally, completely not true, that are literally myths that have been just pushed and pushed and pushed with an agenda for 100 years, about 8 years, actually. So it's that's the point. You have a guide, this book. We spent 30 years writing it. I spent 12 years living at my retreat with my guests to make sure that I understood the problem properly. If you don't understand a problem properly, you will never come up with a solution for it that's proper. So I had to figure out exactly what the needs of the people were. I certainly knew what my needs were at the time, but I needed to see the pattern of humanity clearly, which is why I spent 12 years of my life and put my life on hold for that time period, to really understand how to help people. So Michelle did the same thing. You know, mm-hmm. she spent decades at this game, and so did Steve Slate. So Steve couldn't be with us because he's actually teaching one of our guests at the retreat right now. So he's going to miss a couple of the podcasts we're recording today. Anything else, Michelle, that you have?
I think it's important for people to understand that it's not just about drinking. I mean, the whole AA thing is not just about drinking. There's a whole lot of things that you're taught to believe in yourself, about yourself, that are damaging. And that it took me years to get over, yeah. to figure out that I wasn't this horrible person, that my choice to drink and drug 30 years ago the way that I did wasn't an indicator that I was evil or self-centered. What do they call it? Self-will run riot. I mean, I think of all the things that I was told even before I started drinking, and the labels that were thrust on me, and it really makes it hard to figure out how to be happy and successful in life when you're in a group of people that are just ready to point out your character defects at every turn. And, you know, I just, the other part that we kind of deprogram people from and set them free from, truthfully, is this idea that the choice to not drink and drug has to be combined with all of this other spiritual nonsense where you have to be this, you know,
spiritual being.
Yeah, you have to be this holy, pious person, and you know, you're supposed to be selfless in every way, and you're not supposed to ever get angry.
Let me talk about the research we did with that.
Yeah.
So I made just about every mistake you can make in that first 12 years, right?
Yeah.
I came out of the AA community, obviously, deeply entrenched in it. And I was trying to make AA work, and I just couldn't. But one of the things that really changed me was I was more interested in the research than I was in the dogma. The dogma had a close second place to the research,
yep.
I gotta tell you. It was tough to let go of.
Yeah, it was.
But this was the big piece that changed me. We had a retreat in those days in Hageman, New York, and we ran this thing called The Fellowship, which was an offshoot of AA, which was it was a disaster. We were basically recreating old AA without trying to do so. It just kind of morphed into that nightmare.
Because we thought, like many people do, we can do it. As long as the right people do it.
Yeah, we can do it better.
We can do it better.
If we're more spiritual, and if we serve each other and we create a sober community, and we create, we're laughing.
I mean, we're laughing, but at the time we really believed this.
Yeah, and I know some of you out there are in sober living. Some of you are a part of these ideas. And so when we're laughing, please don't take offense to it. I mean it. I can only laugh today because I'm not crying. It was such a bad idea.
It was
a disaster.
Horrible time.
And here's why I know it was a disaster. One of the things that I did that nobody else was doing at the time was I was tracking all the people that I helped. And that meant for that entire 12 years. And that was hundreds and hundreds and thousands, eventually thousands of people, which was a huge undertaking. It became my full-time job. And what I found is that the success rate, or the people that whose lives improved dramatically, whether they abstained or moderated or their lives just improved, were all the people that left.
They all left. The people that left did great.
And the people that stuck around in this fellowship, sober community, sober living, sober, were a disaster.
Yep.
An absolute disaster. So what I did was I recreated a microcosm of the recovery society in my own little community. And now here's the interesting part. it was my full-time job to manage that nightmare. Mm. And because of that, I had no ability to escape it and its mistakes. And so unlike somebody that runs a sober house and goes home at night and doesn't give a rat's ass about what happens in that house, I lived with the people for 12 years. I put my life on hold. And it was everything that I was doing on that side of things, trying to recreate the most maybe advantageous environment for sobriety. I was actually creating human fragility. I was making people less capable. It's like a parent that doesn't let their kid just go out and live their lives and stumble. The people that left stumbled. Some did.
Oh, sure.
But you know what? They quickly moved on with their life after the stumble.
Yeah.
Because we did teach something fundamentally correct, even with both pools of people. We taught that they could get over the problem, which was something that Alcoholics Anonymous, even the versions we were doing, none of that was taught in those models. So off on the side, we were teaching this alternative idea that you could move on past addiction, which was the thread that pulled us, that pulled the research out of the AA model and was the first deprogramming component that we basically
right.
understood.
No one's powerless.
Right, no one's powerless. And then that, once you accept that, if you really accept it, then everything else in that recovery paradigm comes crashing down piece
That's
by
right.
piece by piece.
That's exactly right.
And freedom becomes completely illuminated. And I realized that my life, I was free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so why the hell was I hanging on to this bullshit from the past, this model that was dying? And so after the 12 years, we let a lot of it go. And then it was basically an era for a good decade of fine-tuning and creating the freedom model. So it was, Michelle brings up something that's interesting at the beginning of this last segment is AA is damaging in so many ways. Taking on an identity of an alcoholic, which there is no definition of an alcoholic, so it's just a negative label. It's purely a subjective negative label used to control people.
That's it.
The treatment industry, it's a control model. It has nothing to do with you getting well. There are well-intentioned people in it, but the model itself is based in control. It's the reason they don't let you have your cell phones, your laptops, your computers. It's because you would go home. You would never stay in a rehab. So they take away any communication that you have with your loved ones. At our retreat, we don't do any of that, and people stay.
Yeah, they all stay.
They all
Every
stay.
Damn one.
Yeah, and they do that because I don't treat them like a baby. I don't treat them as fragile creatures.
We don't treat them like they're criminals or bad people.
Yeah. So if you don't, what you get is people who just are asking, how do I be free? How do I be free? And so if you're in the audience right now and you don't want to go to a retreat, you don't want to do private instruction with us, you don't want any of that, which is the majority of the listeners, what you're going to have is the book. You have the very same program that we teach at our retreat. You can learn right at home for however many bucks for the downloadable version. Go on to Amazon, download the damn thing. At thefreedommodel.org, download it. It's there. It's an entire guide on how to be free from recovery. You can literally just stop, moderate, and move on with your life.
Regardless of what drug you're doing, with whatever your preference is, it makes no difference. Whether your preference is alcohol, heroin, gambling, whatever habit you've developed, whatever you've built your life around that you feel now is out of your control. It isn't, by the way, and that's what you're going to learn in our book. It's really not out of your control. It never has been. But we understand how it feels to feel like you're out of control. We totally understand that. And the book reaches you from that position of we totally get that you feel like that you're addicted.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's okay to feel that way. We can show you how to turn that around.
Yeah, I can speak for Michelle here too. We both, I know for a fact, felt just as hopeless as the worst of
yeah.
them. There was a time in my life where I felt absolutely, completely lost and was drinking a tremendous amount of booze and doing a tremendous amount of drugs every day of my life. And I didn't really see a way out. And so I understand the pain and confusion and sadness and loneliness of being in that place. But I can tell you that there isn't a single listener out there, no one, that has to live that way.
That's right.
You know, you can absolutely move past this problem, and move past it without being in recovery.
Right. Without meetings, without therapy, without any kind of addiction treatment, without coming to our retreat, without any. The truth is, you don't even have to read the book. I mean, people, the majority of people who overcome this problem do so by just
moving on
by just making that change. But if you're somebody that feels like you need help, that's why we wrote the book. That's why we're here. And sometimes what happens is people become, for lack of a better term, they trade one addiction for another, where, you know, you go from drinking every day to now you're at meetings every day and you're feeling trapped there.
Oh, I think recovery is a worse trap.
Yeah.
Because it's tyranny with a smile on it.
Yep. We know what's best for you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it's so condescending and awful.
But I know you can feel trapped there. You can feel like, oh my God, what if I leave?
Yes.
And everything they said it's going to happen, it will come true.
Yeah. Jails, institutions, death.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were all right. And then I'll have to go back, my tail between my legs. We thought that way. I remember thinking that way.
I remember chastising people because I was an old timer after my thousandth meeting.
He was a guru.
Yeah, I was. It's so embarrassing. It's so awful.
I was a little bit.
You were. You were. You were a tyrant. Just like me.
A tyrant.
Just admit it.
It's awful. Like, I think about, if anybody's listening here and I was your sponsor, I am so sorry. Like, from the bottom of my heart, I'm sorry.
Yeah, same.
You know, for all of that garbage that I fed you. I don't think I think as sponsors went, we weren't the worst of the worst for sure.
No, because we always believed you could move past the problem.
Did.
We just didn't know the details on how to do it. We were so mixed up.
We were.
And we were what I look on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, people on the fence.
Oh, well, there's just this massive group of people right now. And this is the reason this podcast is so important. There's this massive group of people who are in purgatory. They're not willing to go to meetings anymore. They're not willing to let go out of fear of this idea that they need support.
Right.
And they just need the right balance of support, nutrition, exercise, spirituality. This sort of, what is the right soup? What if you just let all of that go? Just all of it.
I just envisioned a juggler.
Yeah.
A juggler, and then he thinks, and you're like, keep juggling all these things. If I keep everything in the air, then I'm not going to drink.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and it's all a distraction. It's all a distraction. And I know that's a bold statement, but read the book. You'll see how this all came about. You will see, you know, how the myths were created, why they were created, and how they can be debunked, and you can move on. You can just move on. So
The thing that the Freedom Model does because I was the content editor, the first editor, the first line. So every time they'd send me a chapter, I remember reading it going, they did it. They literally quantified Stephen Mark quantified how people change.
Yeah.
Like that's what struck me is like, this is how he did it. Like, I could never articulate, because there were people that are like, you got sober in AA. And my answer was always, no, I got sober in spite of the bullshit in AA, not because of it. Because after 3 months going to meetings, I was ready to kill myself, seriously ready to kill myself. So I had quit drinking before I went to AA, like 3 or 4 days before. I couldn't really explain to people before it was written down how exactly I changed.
You know, you bring up a great point there, because how many people are out there? There's thousands
Oh, yeah.
that are just like you who quit.
Yep.
Then they're supposed to go to AA. This right. is what happened to me too. This is exactly what happened to me. I made the decision at the accident site where the car yeah. accident happened. And I remember I wasn't scared the next day of drinking again. I was done. And then I was mandated into treatment by the law and by my family and by, because that's what you do.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
And suddenly I become a ward of the treatment/recovery complex, and then they rewrite my history. So they
And then you start to become fearful.
Well, that's exactly what happened to me. You become a ward of that mindset that there is something more at play here than yeah. just your free will, your autonomy, and the ability to be happy. There's something deep. There's something that's going to hold you back, that I'm yeah. different, that I'm somehow damaged, that alcoholics are different. Whatever an alcoholic is, nobody ever defined it for me.
Right.
you think if I had a disease, you'd be able to quantify it. But
yeah.
For 70 years, they haven't been able to do that with no evidence that it exists. But I digress. So you end up going to treatment. You end up being involved in this thing, and you rewrite your history and give credit to treatment when the treatment had nothing to do with it. You got well in spite of those experiences, and then those experiences become your social club because you don't know how to move on, and then you start to identify yourself as a person in recovery, and recovery becomes your social club deeper.
Yes.
You know, and if your family's not involved, you jettison your family, and all of a sudden now these are your new family.
Yes.
And meanwhile, deep down inside, you're going, none of this really makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what bothered me. It bothered me because I knew the truth was I just wanted to move on. I had moved on, and then I yeah. got caught in the trap, the recovery trap. It's such bullshit, and it's so insidious, and I wasted so many years of my life. So if you're in that mix, if you're out there listening right now and you're in that mix, give us a call. You can talk to me. You can talk to Michelle. And I can at least direct you to a solution that makes sense. Get our book. Read it and see for yourself. If you can't afford it, call us.
Yep.
We'll get you one for free.
Yep.
This isn't a money-making thing. Believe me, if I could make a hell of a lot more money.
Doing a lot of other different things.
Yeah. Yeah, I do this, and I've done this for my entire life because I know what it's like to be sucked into a system that damn near killed me. And I now know the way out. And Michelle said it best, most people are going to quit, and whether they're treated or not, in the long run anyway. Why not shorten that span? Why not just make it so that you don't have to bother with the whole recovery charade and go down a path and waste another 10 years of your life in that crap, and just learn to be free and move on.
Yep, you really can. You really can do that. We did it, and we'd be happy to help you. That's what we're here for.
That's right.
Thank you so much for listening today. We're going to try to put these out every other week as scheduled. We also are going to be doing Facebook Lives again, so you'll be able to see our smiling faces. If you or someone you know is seeking help, you can reach us at 888-424-2626 or through our websites, thefreedommodel.org or soberforever.net. From everyone here at the St. Jude Retreat and the Freedom Model, we wish you well. Until next time.